Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim.
Hi, everyone. Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Glad you could join us for our podcast this week. Each week, we interview a leader. This week, we're going to be talking with Dr. Charles Morgan. Dr. Morgan is the CEO of Union Gospel Mission Twin Cities, a large nonprofit organization that serves our communities. His background is included being a pastor, a teacher, a theologian, and he has some great insights around leadership principles that he's learned in his career. Looking forward to our conversation with Dr. Morgan today.
And great to have you with us today.
It's great to be with you as well. Looking forward to the conversation.
Great. Well, first off, can you give us just a little bit of your career background, a little bit of your journey as you've gone through your career from the time that you kind of first started to up to today?
Yeah, well, I graduated from USC, and I was a walk-on. I played football there.
Okay.
And signed in the pros, tore my hamstring with the World Football League, and decided not to go back. But from there, you know, I got a degree in psychology. And I worked as a director in the treatment program for adolescents, 24-hour residential, which was really something that I think took root in me to really want to work with people and work with people in such a way it can bring about meaningful change in their lives. And then I went into the pastorate, where I pastored for 36 years. I pastored the same church for 33 years.
Wow.
In Los Angeles. Went back to school, got a doctorate in theology, went back to school again, got a Master of Science in Marriage and Family Therapy. Worked as a psychiatric social worker in Los Angeles, working with the most treatment-resistant clients in Los Angeles County, which really informs what I do here as a leader in the mission. Coupling that with integrating theology in church life, with dealing with mental illness and the practical kinds of challenges that people have in their emotional lives that often cripple their spiritual life. So I think that's been very informative in terms of my own development and really being able to understand what are the obstacles that people face and the impairments that disable them from becoming the people that they ought to be and the people that God has called them to be. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, being a licensed therapist is also a blessing because it gives me the best of both worlds, kind of, to be able to deal with people practically, to be able to deal with people spiritually, and to be able to deal with people in terms of emotional and psychological issues that really challenge their lives and even their success.
Okay. So tell me a little bit, and Union Gospel Mission has a great history. You've done a lot of innovative things as far as an organization. Tell us a little bit kind of the scope of some of the things that you do. You've mentioned a few. I know the mental health issues that a lot of the people that you work with deal with, but give us a little bit of an idea of kind of some of the areas that you've helped as far as in the community.
Yeah, since being here, you know, we have about 400 men on campus. So one of the things that I did when I first got here was elevate the chaplaincy because I believe it's the fulcrum upon which the mission swings. Mm-hmm. And I think your foundation has to be solid, otherwise everything else will be skewed. So we've really worked hard with our chaplains. We've had a lot of hours of training. When I first got here, they really couldn't communicate with other service providers, especially in the mental health arena. But now they're able to do that really well. We've hired our first psychologist in-house in the history of the mission. So now we have doctoral level and master level interns working here with our students. We have a child development center where we're working with children with trauma. We have the Naomi Family Residence where we have women and children up to 12 years old. We have our outreach community center. And we have our Christ Recovery Center where we've had good success. So we couple our mental health with recovery, with reunification of families, with working with kids with autism or other kinds of impairments to intervene early on that those kids can have a good chance at life. So we do quite a bit of stuff around here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you were to go back and knowing what you know now and you were able to go back and talk to a 22-year-old Charles Morgan, what advice would you give yourself?
I would say get around the people that you respect who really demonstrate that they know what they're doing. Shut your mouth, do a lot of listening, and take a lot of notes. I really, and I'm serious about that. I think, you know, when you're young, you know, you think you know more than what you actually know, even though you may have an unusual acumen about certain things in life. There's still a lot of things to learn, especially about people. And I think getting to know people and work well with people and to be able to motivate and move people towards embracing a jointly embraced task is a learned skill.
That's good. Tell me a little bit about the importance of mentors in your own life.
I think mentoring is something you can't afford to do without. Because I think you need people to bounce things off of who can really give you insight and input. But not only that, I believe in prayer support as well as emotional support, as well as support in terms of what you might need to know as a leader. Because I think sound leaders have already been where you're headed. And I think if you can glean from them and avoid mistakes that wouldn't be necessary if you had a mentor, I think those things can go a long way in helping us who are becoming leaders to not harm people as we're learning to do our best in terms of both leading and guiding an organization. Because at the end of the day, especially in the work that we do, the decisions that we make impact people's lives. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's tremendously important.
So tell me a little bit as far as your thoughts around the importance for leaders to give back, to be mentors and to volunteer and to be involved in, you know, ministries such as yours that are doing great work in the community. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts around that.
Yeah, I think, I had a great professor at Fuller that really taught a mentoring class that I think that was exceptional. And one of the things about being a mentor and giving back is there's something, especially people like myself who's getting older, convergent ministry, meaning that we go from doing ministry primarily to teaching others how to do ministry or how to do service or how to lead an organization. So I'm mentoring people in ministry, but I'm also mentoring people who have a desire to be executives, especially people of color. Who may not have an opportunity to really engage another person of color who is in an executive position. And so I really enjoy that. And I feel that people who take advantage of that are profoundly appreciative of it because a lot of folks don't have the opportunity to hang around with people who are leading, you know, multi-million dollar organizations and getting the benefit of the experience, especially from a minority point of view.
Sure. Talk about a little bit as far as the importance of diversity, and I think there's a lot of thought around diversity within organizations. And, you know, sometimes we look at it in a lot of different aspects, but talk about the importance of that as far as is in your organization as you've, brought in leaders and give me your thoughts around that.
Yeah, I co-chaired the Itasca project with Dr. Penny Wheeler, who is the CEO of Allina Health, which, of course, is a multi-billion dollar organization. And we co-chaired with leaders of other large organizations that had or have as a goal to create upward mobility for minorities within the executive levels of their organizations. Because one of the things that we're seeing is that when you look at organizations, they haven't done a good job of promoting minorities in any significant numbers. And so there's a movement out there of people who are genuinely concerned about this and believe that when they have diversity in their leadership, it's more beneficial for their companies either to be productive or either to capitalize on being able to bring in finances because of the diversity that they have in ideas and approaches, being able to reach different demographics. So here at the Mission, we've really worked at being more diverse and inclusive in what we do, because I think that when you have a multiplicity of ideas from differing backgrounds, it enriches your environment. And I think you find that in economics. If you look at some of the poorest states in the union, there are states that have not been big on diversifying their workforce.
That's good. So talk about, as you've moved into the CEO role and as you've led the organization, Tell me a little bit as far as some of the advice that you'd give to a leader, maybe is the first time that they're building out an executive team, just some of your thoughts around that, the importance. What are some things that you would say to a new leader?
When I took over here, one of the things I did for about 8 months is did a lot of listening. And I also retained a number of all of the executive leaders that were here beforehand. Some people may have thought that I should have created a new team altogether, but my philosophy personally was I needed their information. I needed the knowledge. I needed the history of the mission, because I believe if I was going to bring this organization into the 21st century, I needed to have a great understanding where it was coming from, being at that time a 114-year-old organization. And so my idea was to work with the executive leadership I had and determine based upon their merit whether or not they would stay around in those specific positions. And to my joy, I was able to really work with the executive leadership team. We did a lot of coverage of stuff like important business ideas, important approaches to business, understanding what executive leadership is about, understanding integrity, leading by integrity, understanding the difficulty and the nuances of relationship. Because I told my leadership that we're not going to work to change culture here. What we're going to do, we're going to work to change relational dynamics, which will change culture. And that's exactly what has happened. So being able to bring people into maturity emotionally, and to be able to speak their minds without fear of reprisal, and building that trust relationship with your executive team is indispensable. You know, you'll read in leadership books that the health of an organization trumps everything. Mm-hmm. So if you have a great vision, great ideas, but you have a poor environment, a toxic environment, a non-trusting leadership, you're not going to go anywhere.
So as the CEO, and I look at CEOs as kind of the guardian of the culture, mm-hmm. Setting kind of the, what should the organization be? How do you influence, as a leader, how do you influence culture? What are some of the things that you do to help as far as make sure it stays healthy?
One of my mantras is great leaders model what they expect, and great leaders build great infrastructure. And so really looking at and really contemplating on what is needed for the mission to have longevity long after I'm gone is primary for me. So building an infrastructure where we have succession, where we're cognizant about the kind of things that must be put in place to ensure the longevity of the organization and staying true to the organization's core is paramount. And of course, you need to know what the organization's core is, right? In order to protect the core. But when you understand what the core is, you can change methodologies to improve the success of your organization without actually changing the core. And I think that's where organizations get stuck, is that they fear changing methodologies because they don't know how to ensure the core of their organization. And so they keep old methodologies, which become obsolete, which makes them irrelevant in time. And so we want to make sure that we are relevant in every arena that God has called us to, and in the arenas where we find ourselves functioning and delivering services, the highest standards of care and the highest level of services.
That's good. Tell me a little bit, if you were to give your top books that you've read either in the past or currently reading that you think would be good things for a leader to be reading.
I like Moeller, Convictional Leadership. I like Connecting by Dr. Larry Crabb. I think that's a really important book. William Law, a series called To Devout and Holy Life. I like A.W. Pink's The Sovereignty of God. Those books have really influenced who I am as a person, because I don't think you can lead effectively without really understanding what your beliefs are and how those beliefs are practically applied on a daily basis within the context of the responsibility that we carry, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So anything that technology, I think, can be a tool that can be used to make us more efficient as well as effective, but sometimes it could be a distraction too. But anything that you've found that you've used on a regular basis that's made you more efficient or effective?
Yeah, what we're doing now, using Zoom, GoToMeeting, those kinds of things, we do that a lot. And technology has really changed the way we do business because we're able to get together, you know, with people even across the world, you know, in environments like this, to be able to share information across culture, across continents in a matter of moments. And so using this kind of technology, I think, is indispensable. And I think if you're going to be an organization that's effective in the 21st century, you have to learn how to use available technology, whether that's using qualitative, quantitative, statistical research and information, or whether it means using Zoom, whether that means, you know, caring about your surface when you're walking around or you're somewhere and you need to connect with somebody. Those things have been indispensable to my leadership.
Okay. So outside of work, it's always important to refuel. What are your outside interests?
Oh, I'm a musician. So, you know, I play music on a professional level.
Okay.
I work out regularly. You know, I try to really take care of myself health-wise. Love going to movies, you know, with my family. And just relaxing. And I really love listening to music. I'm a connoisseur of music, so I love listening to music to relax and stuff, okay, as well as playing music. So those things really allow me to get away from the gravity of what I do every day and kind of relax a little bit and keep the old equilibrium in check.
So what instrument do you play?
My main instrument is bass, but I play drums. I play congas and congas. Yeah. And, but my main instrument is bass.
Okay. Cool. I have to ask you, what position did you play football?
Running back.
Okay.
I was a running back. Yeah. I was pretty fast too. Yeah. I ran a 4.440 back in the 70s. Yeah. Yeah.
So any young guys try to challenge you and say, let's see how fast you are today?
What today? Oh man, I run some of these young guys in the ground. You know, I tell them, I give them the old school example of what it means to be an athlete, you know?
That's great.
Yeah.
Any parting advice that you could give a leader, either midpoint in their career or again, starting out, what would you say?
Yeah. Being an effective leader is a very difficult task. Sometimes people desire something because they have a preconception of what it might be. But I think being an effective leader is hard work. I think if you can be well-read, I'm a voracious reader, and I think really giving yourself fully to topics, understanding that one or two opinions may not necessarily be the authority on something. And when you're well-read, you're able to see that there may be a multiplicity of opinions about something, where if you're not, you think, you know, the last thing you read is the authority, and you begin to make changes and plans based on something you read in one book. So I think it's really important to be well-rounded in your leadership. I think it's important to be connected to other leaders. I'm in a CEO salon that I've been in for about 4 years. I'm on the board of directors of other organizations where I'm able to glean as well as contribute. And I think being in a learning process is something that is continual. I continue to go back to school, take classes to keep myself sharp, to make sure that I'm on the cutting edge of the latest interventions and stuff like that. And I think it's important to always have a learning posture, never to think that you know it all. And also, I think what's really important that people may not think about is that leaders don't have to know everything. It's what you bring. It's not always what you know necessarily. And you can put people around you that are astute in areas that you are not gifted in. And you don't have to be diminished by that. I think really when you mature and you're healthy emotionally, it allows leaders to empower people in such a way that those people are not stifled in their giftings and in their ability. And it really adds a benefit to the organization and the health of your organization and your leadership.
That's great. Well, that's great advice, and definitely appreciate you sharing. If somebody would want to be involved and learn more about your organization and either give or to be involved as far as volunteer, how would they do that?
Yes, they can visit ugmtc.org. And Josh Windham, who is our volunteer coordinator, is very good at it. He will get with them, contact them, see what their interests are. And we really work hard to make sure that our volunteers are engaged when they come here to the mission, because we don't want people standing around twiddling their thumbs. But we also want to get people into their passion, something that they're really passionate about. Because I think our students and people who are experiencing homeless, poverty, and addiction, they are experts at survival. So they know when people are sincere and when they're not.
Sure. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Morgan. This has been a lot of fun, and definitely appreciate your insights and wish you continued success in your career in ministry, and wish the best for your organization.
Thank you. I've enjoyed myself as well. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.